Dickens, whom
no,
I
don't like Dickens.
Dickens. But who do you get besides, what's his name, who wrote Lavengro?
Lavengro.
Yeah.
Well, Lavengro is the greatest of the early Victorians. He is actually what? A post-Austen, Jane Austen.
Yes, he's post-Austen.
Now,
yes.
Jane Austen, of course, is the greatest novelist in the English language.
Well, right? She's a great novelist, but not the greatest.
Not the greatest.
I'm a Dickens man. Yeah.
Well, Dickens is messy, George.
Of course he's messy, but he's lively.
He only wrote one great book, which is Pickwick Papers.
I would put that way down compared to Bleak House.
The Place in Lincolnshire?
No.
Lady Dedlock?
Yes, Lady Dedlock, sure.
Oh, I think she's so unreal.
Oh, walking through the wet...
I think you should avoid superlatives, but probably one of the very great novels in the English language is certainly Tom Jones.
Yes.
Now,
that's right.
The test is this, I think.
I would agree with that one, yeah.
That a book is great, which you can open anywhere, and it immediately, you can't stop reading. And then after a while, you say to yourself, gosh, I better go back to the beginning and read this book.
I always like Henry James's crack about Tom Jones. He said, it was so vivid, it's almost as if he had a mind.
I think that's... I think Henry James tends to be tedious, and I don't know. What would you say, for instance, the Americans...
Well, the Americans is a rather a bogus situation, I think.
Well, it is. It's right here.
Yeah.
You're at the Tremont House across from the Athenaeum.
Yeah.
And you're looking here at the graveyard.
Yeah.
And I think that the scene is laid in the Codman House in Lincoln. It almost seems as if it were.
Oh, really? That might be.
It almost seems as if it were. Because what other magnificent Federalist house can you think of within 20 miles of Boston?
Well, there might be some at Salem.
A country house.
No,
but there are Salem houses.
Yeah, no,
yes.
It's a country house.
They're all
yeah.
townhouses, but there is Gore Place in Waltham, and then, of course, there is the Codman
Place.
Well,
I don't think the Europeans, though. I think it has some amusing moments. Is Henry James's greatest or anywhere near it? Yeah.
Well, now, what do you think is his best novel?
The Wings of the Dove.
Well, that... I can only say it's like a thick fog off the glades.
Without a compass.
Without a compass. Exactly.
But who else do you get? I can't. One of the great people I'm always told that I should be enthusiastic about, but I'm not, is Hardy. And I get very little out of Hardy and
I don't like
all
Hardy.
That fatalism
Hardy
in Wessex.
Failingly disagreeable.
Yeah.
And I don't think that you're going to make world renowned by being disagreeable.
The only trouble with Proust, though, is he's very good at the beginning and the end. But there are awful lengths of tedium in Albertine Disparu.
Oh, Lord, the
but he's being a snob, he's best.
When he's being himself,
yes,
he's best as a snob, and certainly Cambrai is great.
Yes, sure.
But
Begins great, yeah. But Albertine I can't go for. But at the end, when he gets back to being snobbish again, I think, and Baron de Charlus and all that.
Oh, yes.
Terrific. That's social as hell.
That's so social, all
right.
Do you
still have a lot of cocktail parties?
No. You'll be very interested to know that the younger generation does not drink.
I know. Well, I've heard that.
It's very interesting. And you'll also be interested to know that the grandchildren of Mrs. Cox don't drink.
That is amazing.
It is amazing.
Considering their inheritance.
That it's a very interesting development. They don't play bridge and they don't drink.
What else have they got to live for?
Well,
sex, probably.
Well, doubtless sex. They keep that very quiet.
Yeah.
But they play tennis a great deal.
That I'm all in favor of, except it gave me my heart attack.
Well, the difference is, George, that they play tennis. We used to bat the ball back and forth across the net.
They've all been trained.
They've been trained, and
yeah,
it's very important. And as far as I can make out, that's the only thing they care about for their children, is they should be good tennis players.
How about sailing?
Well, this is what distresses me very much. It may be the hurricanes, I'm not quite sure, but every now and then a boat cracks up because of a hurricane, and then that discourages people. It's very expensive to replace it.
We used to always get them into
Cohasset. We used to take them into Cohasset. Now the idea seems to be that you leave them at their mooring and you insure them, and you rather hope that they will break away.
Uncle Charlie, I remember, never insured a boat.
You know. No, do you remember we were sailing once with him in a race off Marblehead, and the spinnaker was set and the main sheet was way out, and suddenly, just gently like that,
folded over.
The
sails
went over the bow, and gradually the boat came to a stop, and Cousin Charlie stood up with his tiller between his legs and said, "Well, boys, I've saved a lot of money in my time by never insuring anything about a boat." There was $10,000 in the waves around
him. Still, but he must think of what he must have saved.
Think of what he must have saved over his long years as a racing man. No, I'm very concerned about sailing because I love to sail. The only thing I can tell you is that the interest in the water continues. My son Dougie and his son and a friend went out canoeing last weekend.
Canoeing.
Canoed up the Sallywinder, towing their boat at low tide. The following morning, had to fight their way across the Sallywinder because it was blowing hard from the northwest, and they barely made it. And so we still are very rugged at the Glade.
Yes, but you haven't got as many.
You don't have as many boats in the water.
Sailors,
No. Now tell me about, since you've deserted us and gone to live in Canada and some in Quebec.
Yeah.
What in hell do you do in Quebec in summertime?
It's
I understand from Nancy that you eat potato chips, and that's very bad for the heart.
Well, but that's a minor activity and so on, but it's
first of all,
that's all
you did.
It's love. Well, that got me into trouble, I think, but it's first of all a lovely country with a lot of lakes. And I used to have a boat there, but Nancy finally revolted and said she would no longer lie up on the forecastle catching a mooring. So that did that in, because I couldn't do it by myself. Too big enough for that.
You speak of the Glade. I have to tell you that your daughter Susie is the greatest addition we have had.
Well,
the Glades in a generation.
Woman, yeah.
She's a wonderful person. And her innumerable children now are all growing up. They're all very charming. And the only thing that's disagreeable is something called Wolfus or something, the dog.
Rufus.
Rufus?
I think so.
What is his name anyway? Vulpus? He's a terrible animal.
Terrible animal.
Every time he sees me, he bursts into nasty barking.
Yeah.
Snarls at me, and I curse him, and then he barks all the louder.
Yeah. But Susie's great, I agree.
She's a great girl.
I think Arch is an original, but not a very social original.
Well, I don't understand art. We call him the melancholy Dane because...
Actually, he's a melancholy Dutchman.
He may be Dutch, but he's almost always observed either turning over a rock looking for little snakes.
That's right, yes.
Or else he's down with a fish net. I don't know what he's doing, but he never seems to have anything in his pail.
He loves natural history.
He loves natural history, and he's a very attractive fellow. And whenever he speaks to you, it's charming, but he almost never speaks to you.
He never speaks to you. Yeah.
He raises his hand in salutation as I jolt across Wattles Beach.
But he doesn't stop to...
He doesn't stop whatever he's doing.
...to pass a few minutes talking about Swift, yeah, which is his expertise.
Now, George, I have a very early recollection, very early. I couldn't have been more than 4 or 5 years old, and I was walking across the green with my father, and it was the evening, and I said I wanted to go up there, pointing up to the where the Homans family were then living. Yeah. And my father said, no, you don't want to go up there.
Just like that.
Just like that.
No explanation?
No explanation. I didn't go up. So that's my earliest recollection of you and your family. I was forbidden. Like all forbidden things, I was attracted to it.
Well, of course, my ma couldn't stand it at the Glades. She hated the communal living.
The communal life was perfectly awful.
So we left for several years at Marblehead and various other places. But finally, her children had such a good time at the Glades, visiting Aunt Fanny
yes.
and people like that, that we insisted, literally, that we should come back.
We should come back to the
yes,
Glades.
Yes. Yeah. And I've never regretted it. I thought we had a wonderful time.
We still miss you, George.
Yes, yeah.
We still miss you, but we're glad to have Susie with us.
Yes, well, Susan more than makes up for... She has a good... nature, which I never did.
She has a very good nature. Yeah. She's very, very charming and attractive.
And
girl.
She's got sense about things like money, too.
That's something we all would like to have
yeah,
more.
But don't.
No.
No, you do, but I don't.
No. And they say, I have nothing but cash.
Nothing but cash?
Nothing but cash.
Really? Now that is...
And that interests me very much. I'm inclined to think, I always remember back when you and I were very young and the Great Depression was at its worst. I remember a fellow I was at that time trying to peddle Waltham watches.
I remember how I used to throw them on the floor.
Yes,
that was
them.
Great, yeah.
And I remember I went down to Lowell to sell watches at Christmas time, 1937. That was in the so-called recession. You might as well have tried to peddle Frigidaires to the Eskimos.
Yes, yeah.
And there was another fellow with me, and I remember after a very discouraging day, I remember him saying, well, Tom, you got just two friends in this world, yourself and your dollar.
Yeah.
You can't carry cynicism much further than that.
Well, my father used to say, in good times we're ruined by the bankers, in bad times by the politicians. So that was his doctrine.
That was your father's doctrine. Your father was a very wise man. But now, of course, I think we could say with some truth that we're ruined by the lawyers.
I think you've got a lot there, yeah. But why did these idiot bankers lend so much money? Did they really think they were going to get any of the, some of it back?
I
don't
know.
To their South American republics, yeah.
This is the great financial question, I think, of our time.
Oh, it's terrible, the load. lying on
it's
us.
It's easy for us to say now, how could people have been such fools as to lend all that money to the Germans in order that they could pay reparations to the French, who would then pay it to the Americans. And it went round and round and round, and one day it stopped, and you had the Great Depression.
That's right.
Now, we've lent all our liquid cash down there, and what liquid cash we didn't have, well, we didn't have any liquid cash, so now Mr. Reagan is borrowing money.
Oh, huge sums.
We've just passed the $2 trillion mark.
I know, and this control that has been devised on the debt and on the budget, you know, you can't work that one. It won't work.
You talk to your friend Paul Samuelson and all those fellows, and they talk about the gross national product as if the gross national product meant a damn thing, because all it is the velocity of money, and the more you, well,
well, particular items get counted in over and over,
over and over again. And you take something
like
as fast as possible.
Now, in the meanwhile, I'm rather enjoying myself.
Yeah.
But you're quite right. And I think Uncle Henry was a pretty good prophet in many ways. He didn't realize how quickly the scientific development would come to destroying the world, but he had the notion in his mind.
You know, I'm very interested in historical, my theory being that if you knew enough about history, you would be able to predict the future.
Oh, I don't believe that for a minute.
Well, I know you don't, John.
No.
But when I talk enough, I mean, if you could understand the psychology of all the people who did what they did.
The trouble is, you can't. That's the
Of course, this is why people read novels, why people write novels, why people write history, why people study economy. They all think that somehow or other you're going to find out what makes people go. And now we know. I was talking to Ed Purcell yesterday.
Sure.
Very bright guy.
Oh, yes, I know.
And he said that Star Wars can only be described by a nasty four-letter word. Hoax. He said, hoax, H-O-A-X.
Oh, he didn't use the four-letter word.
Well, I was waiting for the four-letter word, you see. And so he, well, I suppose. But I've never seen Ed Purcell bitter before.
Well, I've seen him bitter, yes.
He's really bitter.
Yeah.
And here we are. We are on a toboggan, and this silly man, like Decatur going into Tripoli.
That's much more like Decatur.
I suppose there's a lot more in that.
Yeah.
Barbary pirates are Barbary pirates,
and you
have to be treated as pirates.
That's right. That's
no,
really
I think
my
a good deal in that, and I think in that case his instinct is probably correct.
I think his instincts are right, but his knowledge is often weak, I think. But he cheers me up. He makes me feel good. Now, that's more important than Star Wars.
You say you feel good now, but how will you feel a year from now when you're bust? You'll go far if you don't bust.
Sure. I remember that great classic.
Classic remark. You'll go far if you don't bust.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. You can drive that railway train right over a cliff.
Yeah.
It's great until you get to the cliff, or rather until you get over the cliff.
I was interested to change the subject again a little bit, because talking to Charlie Wysanski, he always has the greatest admiration for Nelson Perkins. And I thought he was a great guy in many ways. But I never mustered up, though I, of course I'd hardly knew him, but I never mustered up this degree of enthusiasm. Charlie Wysanski really, he was in
Yes.
Gray, really worships him.
Well, my
Did
brother-
Did you ever know him well enough?
Oh, of course, I knew him very well. My brother Quincy and I always referred to him as the great father.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's certain dangers in being a great father.
Yes. Well, I'm certainly not
no,
a great father.
I suppose it's something that, we ought to cultivate, we're now old enough to do it, is a rather slow and labored waiting between words to express. We won't ever know ourselves. But you certainly must by now have an interesting story about dialect. A week ago, my wife and I, as is has been long our custom, were sitting in the front row on a Saturday night at the Boston Symphony Concert. And I noticed when we sat down that behind us was a very interesting family. They were clearly Indians from India. The lady of the family had that mark they wear in their forehead of high caste.
Brahmin.
Brahmin. They were Brahmins, Hindus. Yeah.
Sure.
And a gentleman, very intelligent looking. And then what really interested us was two children. One appeared to be about 10 years old, and a little boy, and there was a girl of maybe 12 or 13. So when the intermission came, I got into conversation with the children.
Yeah.
And I asked them if they played instruments, and yes, they played, the boy played the violin, and the girl played the piano, and then I discovered that the girl also played the violin and the boy played the piano. Oh. And so they were obviously very musical, and we had a pleasant conversation. And then the father said, after listening and looking at me with curiosity for a few minutes, just then the girl said, "Do you live here? You have a foreign accent."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well,
live here.
I've been
if
here
you can
for
the call it living." Yes,
I've been here for about 350 years. My family came over with the first load of bricks.
Yeah,
and then the man said, the father, do you know a man called John Adams who works for Digital?"
Oh, yes, sure.
And I said, "Why, that's
I know him.
Interesting." "He's my eldest son." He said, "He and I are colleagues. We work together in the mathematics of the computer business, a bit like me." And yet this man picked up the fact that we spoke the same accent, the same dialect.
Yes. Well, that means he had, I suppose if you're an Indian and you're listening to X different
X numbers of different dialects.
Yes.
I suppose that it.
But one thing I remember you're telling me in my dim, dark youth about linguistics, and that is, you told me that your grandfather said that he and an educated Englishman of his time really talked exactly the same way.
So I remember that.
Do you remember that? Because you told an
interesting that story. My father told me that. He was talking about when Lord Bryce came and stayed with my grandfather at Lincoln, and he said that they might as well have gone to the same school.
Go, yeah.
Although, of course, they were totally different.
Yeah, and
totally different.
But the Oxford overdeveloped style hadn't.
And the Oxford style, the exaggerated style of the Oxford Englishman is so impossible.
Yeah.
What is his name? you know, the fellow I'm thinking of, the Israel, no, Isaiah Berlin.
Berlin, yes.
He's the damnedest fellow to talk to I've ever known.
Your dialect.
I consider myself speaking the Brahmin dialect of Boston. But the word Brahmin is a very difficult word to define, and it wasn't, in fact, invented by until Oliver Wendell Holmes in the middle of the last century.
I speak pure English, not Brahmin dialect.
You are infected by Grattan.
No, I don't think so at all.
You don't think so? How did you get purer than I?
Well, I got purer than I because the great difference is this, that the George's family are Bostonians. God help them, they can't help it. George is infected with the bad blood of the Crown and Shields, and it goes way, way back. But actually, up to the time when our great-grandfather married a Brooks, there was no bad, my father used to tell me this frequently, there was no bad Boston blood in the family.
They were all lousy Southerners, though.
Well, they were everything you can think of. My father was...
Baltimore and all that.
Yeah. You see, John Adams married a girl from Weymouth.
Yes, but that... come on, let's not make too fine distinctions.
And then their son, whatever he was, great-great-grandfather, married a Baltimore girl. And
but she's just as much my ancestress as
yours. Exactly. We're getting it. You see, you were not Bostonian until then. Then great-grandfather Charles Francis married a Brooks, and that was all right. The taint comes in at that point, George. But then your grandfather married a Crown and Shield, which is the worst blood in Boston.
Oh, well, they were wicked,
wicked. They were wicked, bad people.
Yes.
But my grandfather had the wisdom to go and marry a girl from Rhode Island whose mother, I think, came from New Orleans.
Oh, well, now that would make
sense. So
difference.
You see, we
get
had
infected.
An outcross
yes,
there.
Yes, yes.
Then your father, who is a Homans, which is a very old Boston family,
Dorchester is our ultimate
but
home.
But my father went out west and married.
That might have, going out west might have made a difference.
Made a whale of a difference.
Yeah.
Married, it was a New England families, but from far away, Jamaica Plain and New Bedford had gone out
but
west.
But they were out west.
So that mother was born in Topeka, Kansas, and I was born in Kansas City, Missouri. Well, that makes a whale of a difference, George.
Yes, that does. That ruins you.
You see. So all we have is the pure accent brought down generation after generation.
From the Kansas City stockyards.
From the Kansas City stockyards.
Yeah, that's it.
In the United States.
I have.
I have, yes, because people don't know the difference.
They don't know
the
difference.
They don't know the difference. They just,
some people from the South, for instance, have mistaken me for English.
When I went out west during the war and I was in the army out there, I was fascinated. They would say, "Well, you come from back east?" I said, "Well, yes, I do." And then they'd say, "Well, so did my people. They came from Missouri."
Well, I've had the reverse thing said, that I was a fellow of a Cambridge College for a while, and I remember they are saying to me, "Why do you speak so much more like us?" Which is the other way. They didn't say I spoke exactly.
No. You should have come to lunch today, Joel. Well, you couldn't, but there were three Englishmen at lunch today.
Oh, really?
It was rather amusing because they had totally different accents, all three of them.
Well, you can get a range if you go from the west of England through the Midlands up to the north. You can get an awful long range,
Can you get a range like that in Boston?
Whoa, yes.
Oh, yes,
because
yes.
the good old South Boston accent, which I, because they'd lost their lovely Irish brogue, and it took up this language that includes that word I hate called dance.
Dance, yeah.
Yes, dance. Now, dance, we say.
It's extraordinary how rapidly these things change and disappear, but...
But the brogue is gone,
the
and
brogue
yet it was one
gone,
of the most beautiful accents.
It was very, yeah. very common.
And I remember it in my youth, and I loved it, you know. All our...
I'll tell you somebody, curiously, who has that accent today. Do you know him? Liam Williams, who is head of the Boston Public Library, a charming, attractive fellow. He must be straight from the old country.
Yeah.
But he has that pure, beautiful brogue.
Brogue, it's terrific, Cal. Yeah.
It's a lovely, lovely accent.
Do you think there are many people in Boston who speak like you two gentlemen do?
Oh, we're a dwindling group.
They're dwindling. We are a declining group.
But I think there may be as many as 1,000.
I don't know.
Out of 600,000.
I often wonder because I'm getting old and deaf, but I cannot understand my grandchildren when they speak.
Oh.
They jumble all their words together, they talk very fast, and I can't understand what the devil they're saying.
But I think our parents must have probably felt the same.
I think that is probably a problem of children speaking. I can understand my own children still, and I think that they speak somewhat the way I do. But my wife, of course, speaks exactly the way I do. Well, I speak exactly the way she does. Now, she's straight.
She had some Southern.
She has Southern
influence. Yeah.
Her mother came from Charleston. I think the Southern does something to the Yankee accent. It softens it in some way.
But yep. You don't think your grandchildren have your special way of talking?
It's hard to tell now because the eldest is only 13, and the youngest is what? 4 or 5.
You really can't tell because you don't know how you yourself sound.
This fascinates me. Now, for instance, if I was to hear your tape come back, I wonder who that chump was talking.
Yeah, well, I told them the story about me when I gave the talk on the BBC, and I said after it was played back how awful I sounded. And they said, oh, don't worry, interesting folk accent. That was one upmanship.
Well, it must be that as you speak, you project your voice. And when it comes back to you, it sounds entirely different.
It sounds different, it does.
But George is quite right. In spite of myself, and I never cared very much for Groton School, but there was one great teacher there. And as great Uncle Henry once remarked, the teacher affects eternity. He never can tell where his influence stops.
No, but also Grattan had some teachers who were good teachers, and one of them was a relative of Nancy's and so on, who had been brought up in the English style of talking,
yes.
You know, which was not true at my school.
Well, now, Sherrod Billings,
well, that's
interestingly, grew up in Quincy, our hometown, but he had the most perfect accent I've ever heard. And he, one of the few things that I took away from Groton was his instructions when we were in class with him. He used to say, never raise your voice, speak with the tongue against the teeth. Use your lips. The St. Marcus, that was the rival school, can hear me cheering across the field. They cannot hear you speaking to us boys. And there was very little drama and almost no fun at Groton School when I was there. But
I got a lot of drama and a lot of fun out of St. Paul's.
Well, I never did.
Equivalent kind of school. But
on Sunday evening, the old idea, you went to church twice a day on Sunday, it was high Episcopal, but on Sunday evening, Mr. Billings read the lesson.
The shadows lengthen, the evening,
and the evening comes, and the busy, world is hushed,
and the fever of life is over,
and our work is done. Grant us a safe lodging, and a holy rest, and peace at last.
Yes, you had the same deal as we did on this
land. And, but most of all, with the high drama, there is a the story of Elijah, and I never can remember if it's Elijah or Elisha, it doesn't make any difference, but Naaman, the captain of the host, who came to be cured of his leprosy.
Both unconsciously influenced by the Book of Common Prayer and the Bible.
It certainly were.
As produced by the Episcopal Church, at least.
Can we borrow you for just two more minutes?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I realize you're in a rush.
I want to get God. It could be called.
Do that over again, and you can continue just talking. With
all right.
Look at the camera. Okay.
You want me to repeat it?
Yes, please.
Yeah. My name is Tom Adams. I live in Lincoln, Massachusetts, which is the town that lies between Concord and Lexington, and most of the Battle of Lexington, so-called, and Concord, occurred in Lincoln on the 19th of April, 1775, on the Battle Road as it runs through Lincoln.
Okay, fine.
George is bored with this, but I'm going to bore him more before we're all dead.
Okay, let's try that. Try this time to say something personal about yourself. Okay. The same procedure. And just
you can use that and then just continue on. They have to start at the beginning.
I was born in Kansas City, Missouri.
Start the whole thing all over again.
All right.
Name and address.
My name, should I tell her about the Battle Road?
You can do that again.
Is that all right? I'm very, very proud of that fact. My name is Tom Adams.
Let's get a clear start. Okay.
All over again?
Yes, please.
My name is Tom Adams. I live in Lincoln, Massachusetts, which is the town that lies between Concord and Lexington, and it is the actual place where the fighting occurred on the 19th of April, 1775, along the road as it passes through Lincoln. I was born in Kansas City, Missouri. My mother was born in Topeka, Kansas. My father was born in Quincy, Massachusetts. I've lived in Lincoln, excepting for the war years, since I was 3 years old. I've been engaged in a great variety of occupations. I started my literary life professionally working for the Boston Herald in 1931. I left that because I was starving to death in the Great Depression and went to work for the Waltham Watch Company. I left the Waltham Watch Company to join the United States Army Air Force in 19...
My name is George Caspar Homans. I give them the full name, unlike yourself. I was born in Boston in 1910 on Beacon Street, a house that is still standing. I attended schools in Boston and in Cambridge, and then went to St. Paul's School in Concord, New Hampshire. Then, as my ancestors did, I went to Harvard College. After Harvard College, after a couple of years of unemployment, I became what is called a junior fellow at Harvard, which is an academic position. After that, I had a brief period as an instructor in Harvard. Then I was, because I was an ROTC student, I was called in the United States Navy and served there for 4.5 years and came back to Harvard, first as an assistant, then as a full associate, then as a full professor, and that's where I've been ever since. I married Nancy Parshall. American Tongues was supported by a grant from the National Council for the Humanities. Am I a free man?
No, 30 seconds.
Hang on, wait a
second. That's not okay.
All right, if you could just look, it's the National Endowment for the Humanities. All right.
Repeat then what I'm supposed to say.
American Tongues was supported by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
American Tongues is supported by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. I got it, finally.
Okay, well, we need it, and we need it without a pause.
Was supported.
Okay.
Go ahead.
National Tongues is supported by a grant.
We're almost there.
God. Say it again.
Okay, let me look right here.
American Tongues is supported by a grant from the National Council for the Humanities.
National
Endowment for the Humanities. Is that near enough?
Let's go ahead, try this again.
American Tongues is supported by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Is that right?
Our pieces of equipment.
Oh.